Ladies and gentlemen, 7 o'clock on a Saturday night, and as usual, that means it's time for The Other Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Stacy McCain.
And I'm not. I'm the other guy on The Other Podcast. Hi, folks. I'm John Hogue, and Stacy blogs quite eloquently at theothermccain.com.
Whereas you can find my good friend John Hogue's work at hoguewash.com.
With Stacy also can be found at other fine spots around the interwebs, such as the American Spectator.
Yes. Spectator.org. And by the way, folks, if you hear the dog barking in the background,
that's because
little dog named Ginger.
Well, we live in the real world, and so we are actually really broadcasting from a dining room
at
an undisclosed location,
and the dog is just barking psychotically like Senator Richard Blumenthal. But why would I bring that up?
Well, I don't know. There's been all sorts of interesting news, including various threats from people, including I think the senator.
Yeah, it's like as I say on the blog, everybody's gearing up to DEFCON 1 for the Senate fight to fill the Supreme Court seat formerly held by Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And I've got a post up. It's keep calm and vote Trump. There is going to be incessant noise. Now, I have been, because it's campaign season, I have been trying to stay calm and not what will happen, folks. And I said this.
You don't want to see Stacy excited, by the way.
It's the daily drumbeat of news manufactured by people who profit from needless excitement. So what I'm advising everyone to do is to just repeat to yourself, I don't care. It doesn't matter. Try to develop the stoic temperament of Marcus Aurelius and vote for Trump. If ever you needed an incentive to vote early, this is it. Just go cast your vote for Trump, which is really all you can do. And then be at peace with the world.
Well, actually, people could go out and encourage other folks to vote as well, which would be a useful thing to do. But the important thing is, as you say, just to remain calm. I have a post up that actually went up in the last hour or so at Hoguewash. It's titled In Ray Threats. And basically, I've been replying to various blue check mark types on Twitter with the same response all afternoon. Basically, it says, some advice to the blue checkmark folks and others who are spinning the this is war theme. And this is with apologies to Rick Blaine. There are certain sections of flyover country that I would not advise you to try to invade.
That's a line from Casablanca, where Rick of Rick's American Cafe has some advice to Major Strasser. Yes, that's
he had been asked what he thought would happen if the Germans got to New York.
Yeah, it wouldn't be good. Well,
let me finish off with my last bit of advice to those of us who live in flyover country. And it's amazing how close to the Atlantic Ocean flyover country can be when you live in Maryland. But I have a modification of a poster that actually didn't get used in World War II. It was found just a few years ago. But this just simply says to those of us who are the butt of these threats, keep calm and carry.
Yeah, the like I said, the DEFCON 1 mode, and people are literally, they're talking riots and arson, but of course they've been doing riots and arson all summer. They're Democrats, but it's like, man, you don't want to get involved in any of this, this noise that's going on, it's going to be all right. That's what I keep telling people, is that whoever wins or loses the election, whoever gets appointed or confirmed or not confirmed to the Supreme Court, life will go on. So, and I know that, every day, right, 5 days a week, Sean Hannity is on there, the most important election in your lifetime. And elections matter, but all you can do is vote, okay? Everything else is just noise. Now, if you are at this point undecided about who you want to vote for, I don't know what to say to you. I've said everything there is to be said, I believe, and merely repeating myself won't do this. And don't watch cable TV news if it upsets you. Get yourself a hobby. You know what I've been watching? I've been watching a lot of YouTube videos of police shootings. They have these body cam videos, and so I get to watch the cops kill the bad guys, and it's kind of, if for some reason I find that particularly soothing in these troubled times.
Or people could take up my hobby, one of my hobbies, which is amateur radio. And the interesting thing is it's been quite a few years now that they dropped the requirement to understand how to operate a telegraph key. So you can actually become a ham radio operator without having to learn to code. And that'd be Morse code in that case.
Yeah. Well, we have been talking about the reaction. What are we reacting to? Associate Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg died Friday, surrounded by her family at her home in Washington, D.C., due to complications of metastatic pancreas cancer. She was 87 years old. She was appointed to the Supreme Court by President Clinton in 1993. She was the second woman appointed to the court and served more than 27 years. She is survived by two children and four grandchildren and a great-grandchild, Lucretia Spera. Her husband died in 2010. And to quote Chief Justice John Roberts, quote, "Our nation has lost a jurist of historic stature. We at the Supreme Court have lost a cherished colleague. Today we mourn, but with confidence that future generations will remember Ruth Bader Ginsburg as we knew her, a tireless and resolute champion of justice." Close quote.
Well, it's interesting reading various comments about people who knew her as an individual as opposed to a judge.
Right.
And particularly other people who worked with her on a day-to-day basis. They all talk about her as, at a interpersonal level, a very nice person who was polite and who really...
She was civil.
She was, yes, and collegiality was a big deal to her, which, you know, she was able to disagree without being disagreeable, as the saying goes. And for that, you have to be thankful that we have people like that in leadership positions. On the other hand, a lot of the positions she advocated for were absolutely anathema to me. And there was another thing about her, and this was brought up. I had a post up called A Job Opening this morning, and basically I was all set ready to write something about an analysis of her career. And I woke up from a good night's sleep and found a link to a post at Bookworm Room. And I have a link to it at Hogwash. And basically, he says most of the things that I would have said about her career. You know, she had a chance to retire when Barack Obama was president, and she hung on and thinking that she would be that her successor could be nominated
by Hillary Clinton. And she made a mistake.
Yes, and elections have consequences. But you know, I'm of course the president has said that he's going to nominate a new justice quickly, and. McConnell has said that there's going to be a vote. I'd like to see that happen before the election, because the court should be intact before the election, just in case. Well, why am I saying just in case? Look, we're going to have another Bush v. Gore.
Oh, no.
Well, Biden could take that off the table if he wanted to, by promising not to engage in the kind of vote harvesting and election theft that the Democrats are obviously gearing up for. But Trump and McConnell would be absolute idiots to trust that sort of promise. You know, it's important, some people say, that the Senate should act on that nomination to eliminate the possibility of a 4-4 decision by the Supreme Court if they have to decide on something related to the election. You know, that's probably true, but maybe not. The court's now 5-3, and the Chief Justice, as squishy as he is, might be a reliable vote if he was actually sufficiently afraid of the Democrats' threat to engage in court packing. So it's going to be interesting between now and November 4th.
Yes, I was reading the links, the link to Bookworm Room.
Yeah.
Was he's took right, off the gloves.
He's right, Frank.
And yes, he had some strong opinions about Justice Ginsburg. And see, this is one of the things about the commentariat is that I don't have to comment on everything. Okay, other people, you know, may feel the need to comment on everything, but I don't need to share my opinion about Justice Ginsburg. I think that the fact that I'm a conservative, and you can anyone listening to this podcast can imagine what conservatives might think about someone as far to the left, and she was about as far left as anyone on the court. So you know, it's like,
I think she defined the left perimeter.
Well, I can't think of anyone, you know, and I'm thinking
Sotomayor might have.
Yes, Sotomayor. Yes, yes, I had forgot about her. And see, and that's it. You know, until someone mentions it, I don't even know who's on the Supreme Court. I don't care.
Well, I care to the extent that they're alleged to be the protector of my rights.
Oh, God.
But, you know.
Yeah.
But
your right to a gay marriage, for instance, or your right to become a woman and participate in women's sports. Yeah, yeah, those important rights.
Well, yes, but you see, elections have consequences, and one of the consequences of the last election is that Trump now gets a third nominee to the court. And that should be important both to Biden voters and to Trump voters. And I had a post this week about that was actually titled Biden Voters versus Trump Voters. You know, you've been using the term Biden voters to describe the thugs that are engaging in the BLM and Antifa rioting. And I've had a post up, and we talked about it in a couple of podcasts about how that's not a strictly accurate term from my point of view, although I understand why you're using it. On the other hand, there are a large number of folks in the country who have been mugged by reality. And when they tried to call the cops said they couldn't come. And as a result, nearly 5 million people in the United States have become new gun owners since the first of the year. And that could have some real impact in the swing states. I put a couple of maps up in my post. One of them shows how the states voted based on for families that households that didn't have guns. And the only state that went red for non-gun households was West Virginia. Now, apparently Wyoming shows up as gray in that map because apparently they couldn't find enough non-gun hunting households in Wyoming to have a statistically valid results. But it's interesting, the only state where the majority of gun owning households voted for the Democrats was New Hampshire, which kind of shocked me with their live free or die license plates. But that kind of imbalance could mean, you know, that 5 million people, a lot of them in not just in flyover country, but in places that you'd normally be blue. But let's just say that you get an 80-20 split between those new gun owners. So you got 4 million new voters who are going to vote for the Second Amendment. Well, and I see somebody who says he'd like to call in, and if he'll be just patient for about 2 or 3 minutes, I'll hit the button and bring him in. But that could be enough to he said somebody was bouncing around wanting in, and I was also ready to let him in, and then he went away. But that was beside the point. Ah, he's come back. Here is somebody called the People's Punisher, and I'm going to connect him and let him talk to us. How you doing?
I'm doing good, doing good. I heard y'all talking about guns and liberals and Democrats, and I was like, this is a good conversation to get into.
Well, it might be. The point I'm making is that with the 5 million new gun owners in the country, that could skew the vote. And I was looking at actual state results, and it could basically solidify Trump's lead in the Rust Belt states that he did carry, and it could wind up flipping Virginia and Minnesota, perhaps. So he could wind up with even more electoral votes.
Possibly, yeah. That's a possibility. I mean, I'm a gun-toting, sword-carrying, proud Southerner.
Well, you're also in a very noisy environment.
And oh, hold on.
That's coming through.
Are you in the car?
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
That's picking up dinner.
Rolling
right now.
Down the road there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway,
now I didn't realize how our call in works.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I didn't realize.
Well, basically, what they have I suppose it sounds like you're using the the app.
Yeah, I'm using the app. I have my headsets connected to my phone, and I got my phone entry.
Yeah, well, we're having a little trouble with you now.
Now signal disruption, but
okay. So anyway, but
hold on.
But also,
there you go. Sorry.
Okay. Well, the other, but I mean, there are other categories of voter or people that are likely to, you know, vote Trump in bigger percentages this time. For example, the way that the Democrats have gone after Catholics is not necessarily going to be beneficial for them.
Yeah,
that was the dumbest thing they could have done. The dumbest thing they could have done, going after Catholics. I mean, like, see, my thing is, you don't go crucify a group of people because of the actions of one person or two people. See, not all Christians or Catholics are bad. Just those people that happen to make the religion or the faith look bad. See, now, if you start crucifying everybody, it's like the whole Black Lives Matter that situation going on. You got a group of people who are for Black Lives Matter, but who are doing it wrong, and they're making Black Lives Matter look terrible. That's the same concept of pointing the finger at Christians or Catholics and saying they're all wrong, they're all psychopaths. I'm like, no, there's a big difference.
Well, we're having a lot of background noise with you. I'm going to thank you for calling in.
Thank
this
you
time.
For calling. Yes.
And we're going to invite you back sometime when you're not on the road. But thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I got to go. There's a bunch of damage.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, anyways, but yes, as we were saying, I had a post this week about Trump getting 50% of the Catholic vote, and that links an item from the Washington Times by Valerie Richardson, who I used to work with. She's based out of Colorado, by the way. But anyways, she points out that a Pew Research Center poll released last month found that 50% of registered Catholic voters plan to vote for President Trump, as opposed to 49% for Biden. So it's basically split 50-50, and that matters.
Yeah.
The Catholic vote is often the swing vote in
Illinois, Massachusetts, lots of places.
It turns out to be the swing vote in a lot of elections. Biden is Catholic.
Allegedly.
But the thing is that his positions on issues, especially on the abortion issue, really hurts him. The more faithful someone is, more devout they are as a Catholic, the less likely they are to vote for Biden. And this is...
That's also true of lots of other Christian
any religious Christians who attend church regularly tend to be more Republican than occasional churchgoers
or Orthodox Jews.
And if you look at the exit poll data, you will find that when you ask people how often they go to church, the people who say or attend religious services, I'll put it that way, the people who say never, that they never attend religious services, are the most likely to vote Democrat. So, in other words, they've got the atheist vote locked down. And, there are atheists who vote Republican, but the point is that the Democrats are now the anti-Christian party. And I think that, so this number about the Catholics could They make up 22% of the U.S. electorate, and so it could be a decisive factor in November. And by the way, I was just looking at a story today about these polls, and one of the things you've got to do with polls is look past the top line number. Okay, the top line number is just, you know, whoever's up and whoever's down. But if you start looking at the subgroups, okay, all the polls are now starting to show that Trump is getting a fairly substantial support from Hispanic and Black voters.
It's interesting, particularly Black males. He may do two or three times better than he did in 2016.
Yeah. And so no matter what that top line number is, we know that if Trump is, you know, can double his percentage of the Black vote or increase, you know, however much his Hispanic vote, okay, there's no way that, you know, if that holds true in the election, forget about North Carolina, for example. The only, and they're even trying to claim that Georgia is a purple state, because there's no way that if Trump's getting, 15% of the Black vote in Georgia, North Carolina, there's no way that Biden wins those states. Now, polls are not predictions. They're not prophecies. You don't know, based on a poll, what the vote total is going to be. And we had two rulings this past week, courts in Pennsylvania and Michigan, on this mail-in ballot stuff. So it's gonna be a pretty freaky election this year, either way. But as I keep saying, keep calm and vote Trump.
And get out and actually vote at a polling place and get the margin of victory up beyond the margin of theft.
Yeah, well.
But look, that's just what it takes to do it. Elections are important, particularly if your job winds up being on the line.
Yes.
And and speaking about Pennsylvania or Ohio or various other states in that part of the Rust Belt where fracking has revived the energy industries, I'm not sure what has Biden's been flipping back and forth. And
this past week, we had back-to-back town halls. ABC had a town hall with President Trump, and then CNN had a town hall with Joe Biden. And they had this, I believe it was in Philadelphia, that they did this, and they bring him on, and they have a union official asking him Biden a question about fracking, and it's as I said, it's a softball underhand pitch. I mean, he's just setting it up on the tee for Biden, and you can tell that Biden was prepped for this. And my headline on this is Sundown Joe babbles incoherently about fracking in CNN Pennsylvania town hall, because his answer, if you try to read in the transcript that I've put up here, his syntax is a disaster. But when you're going through here, what stood out to me is that he's claiming that he can create jobs by destroying the energy industry. Now, he is for this green energy. Now, folks, if you remember some of the green energy jobs that Obama was going to create, which is basically boondoggles funded by, you know, we're going to give taxpayer money to some of these things. And I remember that they were building these plants, and the plants went out of business as soon as they had spent the federal grant. All these companies that were supposed to build the energy technology of the future, well, they just went belly up. Most of them, by the way, were Obama campaign contributors that were getting this money. And so what they're talking about doing is shutting down wells, and that somehow that there's going to be jobs created by shutting down the oil industry. And I'm like, you crazy?
Stacey, look, this has to do with, as you said, being able to take taxpayer money and vector it off to friends, relatives, supporters. It's a whole thing has to do with simply follow the money. And you know the best place to follow the money to?
The yellow button.
Oh, he took his cue, folks.
Okay. Folks, if you will go to my blog, theothermccain.com, near the top of the center column, you will see the yellow donate button. The word donate is on the yellow button. And if you will click the yellow button, it will take you to my PayPal account, where you can contribute money to help support the blog and the podcast. Meanwhile, over at my good friend John Hogue's blog, hoguewash.com.
We have in the sidebar there a tip jar icon. Click on that. You're taken off to PayPal, to my PayPal account, where you can make a contribution to the blog to help support it. Or you can keep scrolling down and click on that icon that looks like a hat. And it will take you off to the Hoguewash store, where you can buy all sorts of nifty, keen stuff branded in ways related to the blog. And that will help support the blog as well. Or both our blogs are involved with the Amazon Associates Program, as are many other bloggers. And when you use one of those Amazon links at a blogger's page, that blog gets a small commission on the transaction from Amazon, which helps support bloggers, the good thing that Amazon does. So whichever way you choose to support us, we're always thankful for your support. And that leads us to the five most important words in the English language. Stacey, I believe you are the person who coined that phrase.
The five most important words in the English language are hit the freaking tip jar.
Yes, please. And as I said, we will be now. We were talking about Joe Biden and his off the wall comments. You know, he's not the only Democrat that said something amazingly silly or incredibly stupid. Yes, why don't you go muzzle the dog while I riff on this one? I had a post up called Bad Science and Even Worse Theology. The Federalist is where I picked up this report that Nancy Pelosi wants to keep churches closed. And when asked to comment at a news conference about her archbishop's statement that the state and local government restrictions on worship violate the First Amendment, here's what she had to say. With all due respect to my archbishop, I think that we should follow the science on this. And again, with faith and science, sometimes they're countered to each other. Well, Mrs. Pelosi is wrong on multiple levels with that statement. First of all, there's less science involved in the medical response to the Wuhan virus pandemic than a lot of people might imagine. Good medicine is like good engineering. It uses scientific knowledge and principles to the extent they're applicable to a particular case. But sometimes you get a new problem, something you haven't seen before that you can't deal with using science because there's no science related to it. And so you use educated guesswork based on your experience if you're a physician or an engineer dealing with that sort of new problem. And you know what? your guess may not give you an optimal solution. Matter of fact, it may not even give you a solution at all. You may make things worse. And we've seen some of that kind of hit or miss in the medical response to the Wuhan virus. And, you know, this week's news about Nashville's wrong-headed response to closing certain businesses is just one example of how fallible the public health response has been by health officials or mayors or governors from time to time. So continuing to act as if a failed hypothesis is correct is bad science. But second, her invocation of science may be bad science, but her theology is even worse. You know, without exception, and people, I encourage people to go to my blogging. In the menu at the top, there's a thing called Science in the Bible. It's a series of essays I've written about how generally, well, and completely within my experience, every time there's been an apparent conflict between science and religion, it's been because the people involved either didn't understand the science or didn't understand the religious principles, or were trying to get an answer from one of them about something that it doesn't really talk about. Science talks about how and religion talks about why. And if you ask the wrong question of one of them, it will give you a bogus answer. But third, the other thing about the speaker's comment was she said, with due respect to my archbishop, well, her due respect to her archbishop requires that she submit to his spiritual leadership. And if she can't or won't do that, she has got a very limited range of options. Well, the first thing she could do is she could go full Karen and talk to his manager. Well, I'm sure the Pope would take her phone call, Stacy. As a matter of fact, Francis might even come down on her side on something like this. But her other option is to lead the Catholic Church. And I don't think she is likely to do either. So the voters in San Francisco are getting what they voted for, and they're getting it good and hard.
You know, the thing just last night, coincidentally, I was reading Winston Churchill's History of the English Speaking People, and particularly the chapter about King Henry VIII and the how the Reformation came to England.
Well, you know, the reason the English crown has the title Defender of the Faith is because Henry wrote actually really done essays opposing Luther,
yeah,
and supporting the Catholic Church.
Yeah, that's kind of ironic, really. But the point being is that if you are a Catholic, okay, you don't get to argue with your archbishop. Okay, that's not how the Catholic Church works. Okay, it is a hierarchy. Go look up the word hierarchy. Okay, and understand that the person, it's not a democracy, the Catholic Church. And if you want to be a Democrat, right, okay, in the small d, if you want religious democracy, there are plenty of churches where you can choose from. But the Catholic Church is not your church. And what has happened, and I talked about this in terms of the Catholic vote, is that there are people who are what they call cultural Catholic, right? That their ancestors were part, you know, that usually they're Irish, Italian, or Polish. Okay, you see these people who consider themselves Catholic, right, as opposed to Protestant, because they were raised in a Catholic family. So they think of themselves as Catholic, but in terms of their actual beliefs, they're not Catholic at all. And it's sort of like, you know, and like you said, she's free to leave. You know, there's the door, okay? Walk out. But they won't do this, see? They want to change the church. And I saw something on Facebook yesterday from someone, I won't mention their name. They were posting this thing about someone who wants to bring the message of queer identity to the church, you know, and I'm like, yeah, and I want to bring the message of Marlboros and Budweiser to the church. How about that? Oh no, wait. Oh, so you know, but the idea that this in Pelosi is a fanatic, an absolute fanatic on abortion. I mean, she's as pro-choice. I mean, she practically, you know, wakes up in the morning and stabs babies in the head, you know, and she is so pro-choice, and yet claims to be a Catholic. And no one ever asks her to reconcile that. She, you know, where is the interviewer who will ask her to explain this, you know?
Right.
Anyways, I'm ranting now.
Well, you know, I'm not Catholic. However, I have been in a position of pastoral responsibility for people before. And, you know, that's the sort of thing where you have to take the person aside and counsel them. And if they won't be counseled,
they can be disfellowshipped, as
well,
we
or
say.
Communicated or however, whatever you call it in your particular denomination, but you know there is a point where church discipline is important.
Right, right. If you're going to claim to be a member of a particular sect, okay, then you know you ought to uphold that sect's belief. But see what the liberals are so obsessed with power, and what they want to do is to control the institutional power of the church for political means, and that is a corrupt goal.
Well, yeah, but I mean, corrupt goals are something that you see in politics from time to time. And Stacy, you know, over the last few years at Hogwash, I've mentioned three different Rule Fives to my readers. One is your Rule Five, which I have a great fondness for. Everyone loves a pretty girl. But Saul Alinsky's Rule Five is ridicule is man's most potent weapon. And that's what I've tried to use against people like Mrs. Pelosi in many cases. And then there's the Federal Rule of Civil Procedure, which I've mentioned often because in some of the lawsuits that we've been involved, the person suing us was quite frequent in his violations of that rule. But coming soon, we're going to see an application of yet another Rule 5, because this week the Homeland Security Committee in the Senate authorized subpoenas for John Brennan and James Comey and James Clapper and several others to testify. And, you know, the committee has been holding up on issuing those subpoenas to avoid interference with John Durham's investigation of the Russian collusion hoax.
So does this mean that Durham's investigation is over?
Well, that would be a reasonable influence. And so I think over the next few weeks, we'll probably be seeing an application of another Rule 5, which is invoke your Fifth Amendment rights if you're under indictment. I hope I'm right on that. Anyway, at least as near as I can tell, everything is proceeding as I have foreseen. It may be running a little behind schedule, but so far things are on track, which, you know, it's just the way things turn out.
Yeah. Well, the speaking of legal proceedings,
yeah.
This week we had some very interesting legal proceedings in Pennsylvania. There was a shooting. Hang on a second. I'm catching up with myself here. I have got to go back. Hang on a second here. Oops, wait a minute. No, I'm on the wrong page. Anyways, but there was a riot in Lancaster, PA, and over a police shooting of a rampaging maniac with a knife.
Guy comes out the front door of the house when the cop knocks on the door, waving what looks like a butcher knife.
Yeah.
The cop basically winds up having to center punch him with a pistol.
Yeah. Ricardo Munoz was the fellow. Ricardo Munoz had recently, he had been let out of jail. He was awaiting trial on aggravated assault charges for an incident last year in which he stabbed four people. And
so now he comes out at a cop.
Wait a minute. Munoz is Ricardo Miguel Munoz, 27, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Had been charged with stabbing four people. And he was supposed to have gone to trial in March. However, his trial had been delayed by the COVID emergency. And so he was out with I believe he was supposed to have an ankle monitor on. But anyways, police were called to the scene of a domestic disturbance where Munoz was reportedly threatening his mother. Now, if you've seen the video, and most people have that are interested in this by now, the cop goes up and there's a woman at the door. And so the cop stays on the sidewalk. There's kind of a little stoop there with three steps on it. And
it's an urban row house.
Yeah, it's an urban row house. It's exactly what it's a townhouse. But yes, anyway, so the lady comes to the door and the cop is standing there. And then suddenly out of the door bursts Munoz with what looks like about a 9-inch blade in his hand, charging and screaming directly at the cop, and the cop backs up. He backs up as fast as he can, but he can't get any distance between the guy and himself, and he has no choice but to, unload on the guy. And Black Lives Matter started a false rumor claiming that a cop had shot an autistic Black teenager. That was the rumor that was they shot an autistic teenager, blah, blah. This guy was 27 years old. He was awaiting trial on stabbing charges, aggravated assault. And
not only that.
And Mr. Munoz, I don't know, he's a little kind of a good shade of beige, but he was not a Black man.
No, Munoz is not usually a surname associated with yeah. African Americans.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so it turned into a riot, but the riot didn't last long because the cops in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, which is a community that voted for Trump by a margin of about 20 points, cops weren't messing around, and they swooped down and arrested about a dozen of the protesters who were protesters. Did I say protesters? Rioters who were engaged in vandalism and arson. And among those arrested was 20-year-old Catherine Cat Patterson. Miss Patterson, it turns out, was a junior at Franklin and Marshall College, a private liberal arts college in Lancaster, where the annual cost of attendance is $75,000 a year, including room and board. She's also a Kappa Delta sorority member and an ally of the college's Black Student Union. So anyways, they started a fundraiser for Kat Patterson, and she became kind of a cause célèbre when the judge imposed $1 million bail. Now, folks, the reason why the riots have gone on and on and on in places like Seattle and Portland is because the cops have a catch and release policy.
Well, not the cops, the DA and the court.
Yeah, the DA, the liberals in who run places like Portland don't consider rioting to be a serious crime. So whenever they catch a rioter, they just turn them loose and they cycle back in there. And after a while, the cops just stop arresting them.
Well, they had that one arsonist that got brought in. They did catch and release on him, and the cops arrested him later the same day on another arson charge.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just absolutely amazing. On the other hand,
but
remember that we were going to have 50 days of siege around the White House? And then Attorney General Barr says, well, we're going to start charging people with sedition. Sedition's 20 years.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so.
And you know what? They've canceled that siege of the White House. It just isn't going to happen.
Well, anyway, so they put $1 million bail, and it was Ian Miles Chong of Human Events who pointed out that the next that was Sunday night that they had the riot. Well, on Monday night the protesters showed up. They sure didn't commit any crimes because they knew that they were, you know, that people had not returned from night one. And so this $1 million bail, and they eventually lowered it and let them out on Thursday. They were finally turned loose, most of them. I believe there was at least one of them that was a felon in possession of a gun that is being held still there. But I had some of the commenters had some rude things to say about our sorority sister Kat Patterson, and I don't want to get into this, but it was suggested that she is a big fan of British television programs, and so I'm going to leave that there.
Yeah, well. You know, the interesting thing is here she is at an expensive liberal arts college, and clearly she's not learning about how things work in the real world.
Yeah.
But I'm not surprised. I had a post up, one of my don't know much about biology posts, and I picked this up from the Hill Faith blog. And they had a question up prompted by a video that had been put up by the Colson Center arguing that the Colson Center was arguing that there's no scientific evidence for a gay gene, that such a gene exists. And I thought it was a pretty wise comment from Hill Faith that doesn't mean that such a gene will never be found, but I ought to encourage advocates on all sides of these issues to avoid definitive declaration about what science does and does not prove. You know, that's true. The lack of scientific evidence should lead both sides to be careful about their claims. However, I would venture to suggest that if there is a gay gene or a gay mutation, it has to be recessive because it would tend to limit reproduction and not be passed on. Look, there are all sorts of self-destructive and immoral behaviors that can be affected by someone's genetics. A lot of alcoholics have a genetic predisposition to their problem.
I resemble that remark.
Well, maybe so. But while our individual genetics may make some parts of our lives easier and some parts of our lives more challenging, our genes don't control our moral destiny. Humans are clearly complementary sexual beings. We come together as male and female partners to create and raise the next generation.
I wish you could see his hand gestures as he describes this.
Living a life that denies that fact, you know, places someone at odds with the truth. And, you know, that kind of denial of reality can wind up leading somebody to a life like some sort of unfortunate character in a novel by Dostoevsky. Life is filled with difficult choices, but choosing truth, you know, always works out the best in the end. So science, like I said, tells us how, religion tells us why, and they complement each other. We really need to pay attention to both. But
there is a rather famous passage in chapter 30 of the book of Deuteronomy, in which see, I have set before you this day life and good and death and evil, in that I command thee this day to love the Lord thy God, to walk in his way and keep his commandments, etc. But if you turn away your heart so that you will not hear, and worship other gods and serve them, I denounce unto you this day that ye shall surely perish. I call heaven and earth to record this day against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore choose life, that both thou and thy seed may live. In other words, remember how they got there. Where in here in the book of Deuteronomy, right? Okay, this is Moses, you know, dictating the law to the Hebrews, okay, who had survived centuries of slavery under Egypt, right? Under the pharaohs, right? When they had arrived, okay, if you remember the story of how they ended up in the land of Goshen, right? They arrived because Joseph had been sold into slavery and carried into Egypt, right? Where he became a chamberlain to the Pharaoh. And then his brothers who had sold him into slavery, when the time of famine came, right? They show up in Egypt seeking food. And Joseph recognizes his brothers, and when he finally reveals who he is, they fall down and say, please forgive us, you know. And he said, you meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. Now, and then, you know, after many generations, right, they have swollen the ranks of the Hebrews who had originally been just a handful of people. They become a great nation. And God delivers them from bondage by many miracles. They walk through the Dead Sea.
Red Sea.
Yeah, right. On dry, you know, God parts the water, the pillar of fire, the smoke. All of these things that these wonders he had performed for them. And Moses says, therefore, choose life. Choose who you will serve.
Well, yeah, you know, and the point is that I will just say that it's been my experience that reliance on God to care for me has been a source of the strength that I've had to be able to deal with things. And, you know, there is a promise in Scripture that God won't give us anything to deal with that we really can't handle. Although there are times when I agree with Mother Teresa that that's true, but I wish God didn't trust me so much.
well, you
On
know,
the other hand, there are people who are not trustworthy.
Yes, there are people there who are not trustworthy.
Who are human scum.
Yes, human scum, yes. I did a post this week about Rick Wilson. Now, it is my policy, general policy, to ignore all these never Trump people, to pretend that I have never even heard of Bill Kristol, Jonah Goldberg, Tom Nichols, that whole crew, David French. I try to pretend that they don't even exist, because it's like I said at the outset of the program, is that you have to be like Marcus Aurelius and not allow things to disturb your tranquility.
Well, either that, or you just have to be actually like Ruth Bader Ginsburg, in one sense, about being able to disagree without being disagreeable. And for example, David French is somebody like that, who I still admire, although I think he's wrong as a $4 bill on a lot of his opinions these days.
Well, I am an excitable person. Okay.
Yes, you are.
Be a hereditary trait. And we were speaking about genes. I've got the crazy gene. Some people have the gay gene. My genes are just crazy. But anyway, I get excitable. I get worked up. And so sometimes I just have to ignore people. But this week, Rick Wilson tweeted out what was transparently a blackmail threat against Ben Domenech of the Federalist. Ben Domenech is the founder and co-founder and editor of the Federalist. Now, I have known Ben Domenech for over 10 years. He is, he has had his ups and downs. But Rick Wilson threatened to drop an OPPO file, OPPO being opposition research, which he described as hideous and vivid. This led me to share some advice. I don't suppose Rick Wilson will listen to my advice, but my advice is this: never make threats. Okay.
Yeah.
If you're going to do something, do it. Okay. But when you start threatening people, especially as a journalist, okay, if you don't, buddy, you better watch out. I'll publish the dirt on you. That's no longer journalism. That's blackmail. And
you know what? Some of us don't respond well to blackmail or other sorts of attempts at that. And you know what? Our crazy person is dangerous of the evening is you and me. Believe it or not, it is dangerous to try that sort of stuff on a crazy person.
Somebody once said of me that said of a famous person that he was going to try to out crazy Stacy McCain, and it can't be done.
Well, yeah, this is true, folks, because he has been real good about following the lessons I've given him. We've been sued for defamation for telling the truth about someone. And, it didn't work out very well for that guy. Poor Brett Kimberlin tried to sue us for defamation and wound up with more in the public record than he wanted to know about. And you know what? We never threatened him. We just told the truth.
Yeah, and that's the way it is, folks. Here on Saturday night, September 19th, and as you can hear that boogie-woogie piano in the background, it means that we're approaching the end of the hour.
About a minute 15 to go.
Yes, and so here to remind you that every Saturday night, 7 o'clock, same place, same time here for the other podcast.
Stacy It's been fun. Let's do it again next week.
That's right.
Good night, folks.
Mr. Breeze.